Hello and welcome to the Jazz Podcast. I'm your host, Rob Cope, and today is episode 237. Oh my goodness. We're talking to Maria Christina Harper today. Her new album, Passing By, is released on the 27th of October, and they have a live gig at the Royal Albert Hall Elgar Room on the 2nd of November. So before we talk to Maria Christina, let's have a quick listen to her track, Passing By. Christina Harper, hello. How are you doing? Welcome to the show.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
We just started by listening to the track Passing By. Tell us a bit about that track.
So it will be out. It's not out yet. We have released one single, then another this month, one more just before the release, and then end of October, Passing By, the whole album will be out on vinyl, CD, and you know, digitally everywhere. And it's called Passing By. And we have our debut, our album launch on the 2nd of November at the Royal Albert Hall, the Elgar Room. So we're very excited about that. So Passing By, I think it's there's a common theme between the album and the track itself. So it's really about, you know, exploring and sitting back and looking around and thinking, being more esoteric, you know, and philosophical about life, and thinking. It all can be very serious, but it all can be very light in terms of, you know, the concept of passing by through life and passing by through this life, and life is a journey and all of that.
That's so interesting. Let's come back to that in a minute, because I'd love to talk to you about that philosophy. Can you tell our lovely listeners a little bit about yourself as well? So much to talk about. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I'm a harpist and I'm a musician, and I finished my studies in Athens in Greece, where I grew up, and I admire and I listen to a lot of classical music, and I'm a classically trained harpist. But in my, you know, free time, spare time, it was all about other kind of music, guitar-led, electric guitar-led stuff, and more rocky, maybe jazzy, interesting music. So I always thought, oh, I want to do something with a harp, but what do I want to do? And then you always have, I know it sounds a little bit cliche, but many classical harpists and many classical musicians might not feel necessarily bold enough to do something outside the classical world, because you've been bombarded with all of this, you know, Beethoven, Mozart, and all these great amazing, talented composers, and who am I to compose after them, after they've done it? So that's an interesting concept, talking to people that haven't been classically trained, you know, singer-songwriters. Day one, they start singing and writing and composing with no guilt. And that's, you know, I admired that and I always wanted that. So finally, after completing my studies, I was also interested in music therapy. So I studied that as well. I did an MA in music therapy in London. And one of the main things that we did was improvise. So, you know, deconstructing the whole idea and the whole sound of the instruments, trying to find your voice through improvisation. So that was when I started, you know, slowly being more, feeling that it was okay to do something. So I first started being more experimental, playing with bows and pedal effects, and then gradually, long story short, to today, having this jazz trio with these amazing musicians, Josephine Davis on the sax and Evan Jenkins on the drums. And we have, you know, Harper Trio, and we play. So it's a mixture of, I think it's jazz influence, but also there are folk elements from my background. There is a lot in my background, Greece and Egypt, Mediterranean generally, but also the huge influence that the UK has had on me for so many years. So there is room. There is a lot of room for improvisation in our pieces, but there is also a set structure where we have moments that we know what we're doing and what we're following.
Wow, this is so interesting! What an amazing way to reach the point you've reached now through a master's in music therapy, which. Can you explain that for any of our listeners that don't know what music therapy is, as opposed to what you're doing now?
Yeah, so music therapy, in a very short and easy way to understand it, is like psychotherapy, but without the words, using sounds instead of words. Obviously, you can use words, but that's not the main means of expression. So you would have, in Europe at least, we would have a room full of instruments. You don't have to be musical to come as a client, and then it's all about improvising together, whether it's a group or one-to-one, trying to express yourself through different kind of sounds. So it's a room full of instruments that can easily produce sounds, and a little bit more complicated for the more, you know, for the people that want to risk, you know, more. So it's really, really, it's a very nice way of, most of us know how music can have an impact on us. Sometimes you might have a specific mood and then you listen to a song or a piece or a sound and you think, oh yeah, that matches what I'm feeling. Consciously or subconsciously, you might think about that. So we're exploring that concept more, and some things are easier to be expressed through sound instead of words. Sometimes you might have said something so many times, you have no more words, or it's so traumatic, you have no more words, or you literally can't speak because of a disability. So again, music and sounds can be your world. So it's very interesting. Very, very interesting. It has, you know, I don't want it to sound cheesy, but it did change my perspective in my life.
I think it's wonderful that it's changed your perspective when you weren't receiving music therapy as a client. You've trained in it as a professional, but it's had such a big impact on how you've viewed how music can be made and created. And it's led you, like you said, down the path where now you're releasing your album and have a launch at the Algar Room. It's incredible. So do you play, did you ever, what were you going to say?
I was going to just finish off with music therapy. I think, as you said, I agree, it's very interesting. And you give less and you take. You want to obviously give more, but it's so powerful, and people are amazing human beings, amazing creatures, and they I've worked in prison settings and palliative care, hospitals, and it's amazing how much you leave the room and just feel full of life. So yeah, that's what I want.
That's wonderful. So how long do you still work as a music therapist?
Yes.
Yes. How long have you been doing it for now?
I graduated in 2009.
Where did you study?
Roehampton.
Oh, brilliant. That's a great course, isn't it?
Guildhall as well. It's really nice. And now I teach there at the foundation.
No way. That's amazing. Wow. Oh, this is so cool. Brilliant. How long have you taught there for?
I've been a visiting lecturer for many years. I cannot remember. Seven?
Don't worry. We have to add it up.
But yes, exactly. I've been teaching the whole course the last 4 years.
Wow. So what did you do your undergraduate degree in before the music therapy master's?
The harp.
Like classical harp?
The pedal harp. Classical harp. Classical pedal harp. Yeah. So you can either go into your music therapy MA, either from a nursing medical kind of background or but you have to know music, or from a musical background. Hopefully you have some knowledge of psychology, and it's easier to grasp everything in 2 years if you have.
Did you have any background in psychology?
I had a little bit, I hadn't been in university or college, but I was interested. So I knew of, you know, I'd read many books, and philosophy was something that was of an interest. So I had some clue, but thinking back, going back, I had no idea where I was, you know, stepping.
Wow. This is brilliant. The way you've like combined the two, I think music therapy is such a art and discipline in its own right. Like for the listeners understanding, is not something I could do without years of training and years of understanding. Like you say, like, it sounds a lot like music, but it's really very different. But the way you've brought those experiences and your pedal harp and kind of merged the two and taken the improvisation and grown with it is wonderful.
It's really great. I think one world just feeds the other,
right?
Where you come with so many ideas in improvisation, with, you know, adults that may have had no musical background, and sometimes that can be liberating. You know, you have no concept of rules and boundaries, or, you know, mistakes that you shouldn't do in music. So sometimes that can be, you know, I see people coming in with such an openness that a musician might not necessarily have. And then the music world relaxes me. You know, a concert is a concert, and the whole fun around gigging and rehearsing seems more light than it used to be, because it contradicts the atmosphere of a music therapy session. So it's really nice to have both.
Can you tell us how you write the music that you've written? Is everything on the album an original composition?
Yes. That's so amazing. I've written all the music. I've been writing a lot. I mean, it's my third album. My first album was more experimental. It was solo, pedal harp with guitar effects. And then my second album was with a duo, and we had co-written the music. And for this album, I had already started writing two pieces before our trio had formed. And then I was down in Hastings, and that's where we all met, and that's where we gigged and rehearsed. We didn't gig during COVID, but that's where we met and rehearsed and recorded. So then I had, you know, this trio in my mind, and I just sat on the harp, and a few ideas came. Sometimes it's a melody that will start, and you think, oh, where do I want to go with that? Sometimes it's a pattern or a rhythm, or a concept, and you try to go around that.
Do you record them? Do you just put them out? Do you write them down? How do you like get these things out of your brain?
I record them on my phone so I don't forget, and then I work on them again the following day, and so on. And then I write notes, but nobody would understand the notes. So for Evan and Josephine, I had asked them, do you prefer to have like a music sheet in front of you, or do you want me to just play and explain? And they both prefer that. But I have started writing so that, you know, everything is written beautifully as recorded.
That's very interesting that if they prefer you to just play and explain, are they basically memorizing it as you're teaching it to them?
Yes. So we might repeat and play. If we have a a melody that we play together, we might repeat it. So it's like practicing together, rehearsing together. And they're very fast and amazing. So it's really, it's a great way of everyone coming together and, you know, sort of working on the idea together instead of each person having a music sheet in front of them.
It's amazing. They've really bought into the project to the point where you really want with a band, where it's all from memory, if it's a possibility, you know, because then you can just be busy making music instead of like looking at the dots, isn't it?
I agree. And we never have a music sheet in front of us when we play. So it's a must that we don't have that, because it's all about, you know, as you said, enjoying the moment and exploring the sounds that are created at that point, especially in the improvisation parts. So it's really, I feel, and I think both of them feel more free when you don't have something to cling on.
How many times do you have to play them before you're going to record them, let's say, ready for this album?
So that was really fast. I can't remember exactly, but not many times. I remember, and Evan is so great. He has these expressions and on his face. Every time we rehearse a piece, he would just look at us so excited, saying, oh, this is amazing. And so we were all excited. I think it's just we really clicked from day one as people, but as musicians as well. And we have a common concept of, at least at the moment, how we like doing things and how we like expressing ourselves through music. So I think it was really fast before we recorded. And then we had just one day at the studio, thinking if we need another day, of course we'll come. And then we recorded everything in one day. And for one track, we just played it. So we recorded twice each track on that day, so to have an option. And then for one track, we just looked at each other and thought, you know, let's not play it again. We love it. Let's just keep that. So it's really, it seems very natural and easy with us three. I'm sure other people have that in their trio or their band, but it's really nice when you have that.
It's working. It's beautiful. How did you choose those two, Josephine and Evan, to be your bandmates for this? And I love that it's just a trio, by the way, because it's got so much space in the music.
It has a lot of space, which is amazing. And so how we met, I lived in London for many, many years. And then COVID started and everything sort of started closing one by one. And many friends, musician friends, went down to Hastings, and they were like, come down to Hastings, don't stay in London, everything's closed, you know, it's all about culture there, so it'll be more relaxed if we're there. So I also went down to Hastings, and so the people I knew of Josephine and Evan, so they were friends of a friend, and I was recording something different at that time with a jazz singer. And it was a duet. And then I asked my friend, an electric guitarist, to come. And then another friend, double bass player. So these two people brought a drummer and a sax player. So this drummer and the sax player was, you know, Josephine and Evan. And we really clicked. And then my friends, the double bass player and the electric guitarist, left, went back to London when everything started opening back because I had many gigs and all of that. And I asked them, I don't know, maybe it will work, maybe it won't. We were becoming friends. We were good friends by that time. And I asked them if they wanted to try it out as a trio and see how it goes, because we were all, you know, living 5 minutes away from each other and we liked each other. And it just, you know, we clicked from the first moment we played and we were very excited. And then when we gigged, other people were excited too. So that was very nice.
That's brilliant. That's a wonderful way for it to have happened so naturally and, you know, just like, and yeah, it's amazing hearing you say that, because I just can never imagine it now with like electric guitar and bass. Like I love bass players. I quite like bassless music because it leaves a lot of freedom and a lot of space. And, you know, harmonically, it means the things you play are a bit more ambiguous because there's not a root note all the time
That's true. I have the opposite. I mean, I love music that is very open, but I always wanted to be a bass player, especially an electric bass player. It's so cool the way that they stand, the way that it sounds, and the bass, and even their hand, the way it's moving. But and we did discuss with the trio whether we are okay. I mean, I asked. It was my security of. Because I would be the bass, I would sort of come into the world of the bass as well. And both Evan and Josephine were, you know, loved it and wanted to continue as a trio. And then when we played for the first time before we recorded, when we rehearsed and we listened back, you know, on our phones, it really worked, and it worked for us, and we liked it. So yeah, I think it is more open. It does feel more open.
Feels wonderful. I love the music. Let's talk about your launch gig then. So on the 2nd of November, Elgar Room, what a gorgeous place. Is that somewhere you always had in mind that you wanted to release?
I've already played there. I'm very lucky that I played there, and it's beautiful. And the people there organizing the team they're great. And I remember talking to them about something else that I've done there, and they were very excited. They wanted to listen to the music, and you know, then we discussed the idea, the possibility of launching there, and they were very excited, and I was obviously very excited. So yeah, there is something with that room. Obviously, it's the Royal Albert Hall. Who wouldn't want? But especially the Elgar Room, because so many people have played there, and it's a jazz, has a very relaxed but informal, but in a professional way. It's a beautiful room, great sound. It has something very cozy to it. So yeah, I really wanted that place. So I was very happy when we could find the dates that would suit us as well. So yeah, everything will be ready until then, you know, CDs, vinyls and all of that. So we're very excited.
This is great. So people can buy it on vinyl as well as CD, which is amazing. Have you done vinyl before? Especially.
Yes, I love vinyl, and I don't know if people buy CDs anymore. I'm sure they do, but I think vinyl has come back stronger, and it's coming back more and more. Obviously, I think the digital world is a huge platform for people, and it's easy, but it's so nice, and you have all the artwork, and it's bigger, and you can see it, and you have the credits, and we have some notes here and there. I always like that, you know, listening to the music and seeing what the artists have thought of, and how they find that the artwork sort of maybe describes their music, and if they have personal notes in there. You know, I always wanted to find out everything that I could, so that's what I like a lot. And CDs are great, but vinyls are, you know, bigger. Yeah. They're more vintage. There's something about vinyl.
They're gorgeous, aren't they? And the fundamentally the sound they make is so like, tell you what I love about it, if I really boil it down, you can't fast forward, you can't just track skip. I mean, you can, but you got to move the needle. It's an ordeal. Like, it's easier to just listen, and it kind of encourages you to listen to the whole thing, I think, you know, rather
That's
than starting
true.
And stop it.
That's true, because you have to actually, you know, leave your comfortable sofa and then skip forward. So you wouldn't necessarily do that, but there is something. Yeah, there is. It's more of a ritual instead of just scrolling and skipping and being bored or not really concentrating on what you're listening. I agree.
Yeah, it's lovely that you can do it. So tell us about the artwork then, because it's a gorgeous picture for the listeners who can't see it. It's kind of a silhouette effect with a window behind.
Mm-hmm.
Just to give you a very colorful silhouette, all like purple, blues, you know, like you look like some, like the sun's rising behind you because you've got like the red the red cape and everything. It's gorgeous. Yeah. How did you arrive at this as your artwork for the project?
Thank you for liking it. Well, we had a day where we were trying to find a place to do it, like a photo shoot day. And Evan suggested a beautiful place in Hastings, where has a lot of history, but I won't go there now because it's a long story. And so we went in, and it's beautiful. That's where we had our single photos as well. But I wanted this idea. I love 70s music, so I wanted this idea. And I think our music sort of had a 70s kind of sound, or, you know, something that has an influence. I don't know how to, in my head at least. And I really like the covers that are not neat and very precise, and you have a realistic trio sitting in front of you, and you can see them exactly how they are. I wanted, you know, the music is not as realistic, so why not the artwork as well? So you can see us, the three of us, as you said, but you can't really see our faces. It's like figures. But you can see colors, and you can see the windows, and we're connected, but also we're separate as well because we have three windows behind us. So it was the idea of having silhouettes and colors more than faces, and something as a single would have. So the single is sort of, here we are, this is us. But then in our album, hopefully, you know, go with the flow of the album and the sound, and we can be a little bit more experimental.
Yeah, I completely agree with you about the sense of it not being too precise and neat. Sometimes that kind of takes away a bit of the reality and the energy, I think.
Yeah, it's as if you're narrating the album, just having notes for each piece of what it meant and what it, you know, it's sort of, that can also work for some, you know, people. But for this one, I think with so much free improvisation and in the composition, but also in our live gigs and in our recording, I think we had to go with a little bit more of a freedom, you know, a visual freedom that will allow each person to think what they want to think when they see it, and not just stay with the characteristics of our face or what we're wearing, you know.
Yeah, it's brilliant. It makes your imagination fill in the blanks, which is really cool.
Mm.
So we're going to finish with Standing Alone, which is another, actually, this is your second single. So this, I think by the show is released, this will just have come out, I suspect, for people to be able to go and listen to. But before I press play, Maria Cristina, can you tell us a bit about this track, please?
So Standing Alone, there is this beautiful hill in Hastings. Have you been in Hastings?
Not I don't know. It looks gorgeous. I want to go. I'm looking at it, like I'm just looking at it on the map and the sea next to it, sort of thinking how nice it would be to be there right now.
It's beautiful. It's really beautiful. And it is the third, I think, sunniest place in the UK.
Wow.
So that's a good thing. So it's a beautiful place, and it has these beautiful hills, and one is called West Hill and one is called East Hill, self-explanatory. So I was in East Hill, and it's not as crowded up there because there are no houses, and it's like a green hill where you can see 360 around you, the sea and all the beautiful scenery and the old town, and it's very, very very relaxing, very inspirational. And it's almost, you know, every time I go there, I feel like I want to meditate. I only done it once, but you know, that sense, I feel that every time. And so one of the pieces in the album is called East Hill Meditation from that. And again, from that beautiful hill, when you're alone and you just look and you're within nature, but you can also see people and you're thinking, again, being a little bit philosophical and having these questions in your mind, who am I, where am I, you know, what am I doing and all that. And then you're thinking, you know, I'm literally here standing alone, but am I alone? And why do I feel alone when I'm surrounded with so many beautiful things and beings and all that? So it's a conversation with oneself about life again.
Wow, what a gorgeous explanation. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast. It's been so nice to talk to you. Let's have a listen.
Very nice talking to you too. Thank you for having me.
It's been a pleasure. I'm going to press play on Standing Alone. This is from the Harper Trio's new album, Passing By. Whole album is out on the 27th of October, launch gig on the 2nd of November, and this single, 22nd of September. Oh my goodness, that's the most professional thing I've ever done. Thank you.